This is season 6 of the Team Roping Journals podcast, The Score. With over 2 million downloads, this is where team ropers talk. Before we get to this first episode, I want to let you know about our sponsors at Forage First Patriot Feeds. Today's episode is brought to you by ADM's Forage First Patriot Feeds. You can find out more at admanimalnutrition.com, and we'll tell you more about it in the middle of the episode. Welcome to season 6 of The Score. Yep, 6 years in. That is a lifetime in podcast land. Most of them do not hang on for 6 years. So I am so grateful that you have all stuck around with us and you've been telling your friends about it, because more and more people, I just looked the other day and like 12 people listened to episode 1 just yesterday. So that's wild. I don't know what you're all doing with your lives, but thank you for sticking with us all these years. We sure appreciate it. And to kick it off with season 6, we have the GOAT. Well, one of them. I think it's still up for debate, but definitely one of the GOATs of the team roping game, of the healing game, Jade Corkill, on episode 1 of season 6. So I think Jade and I could do 6 or 7 podcasts throughout the year and still not cover everything that that we would like to talk about. So I wanted to start off at the beginning with Jade on this first episode with him, first full-length episode with him. I think we've talked lots of times when he's won rounds or won rodeos, but this is the first full interview with Jade where we're going to talk about Ice Cube. We do kind of venture off and cover plenty of different things throughout this podcast, throughout this episode, but we talk about Ice Cube, the horse that made him, that he just lost during Cheyenne of 2022. It's the horse that he rode when he was 15, the whole way up until setting the world record at the NFR, and then past that for many, many years. And we kind of cover how Ice Cube shaped Jade's life in this episode. And of course, you'll get lots more other little details about what's going on with Mr. Corkill. So I hope you all enjoy this episode, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Hey, by the way, it's been a little while since we have had any reviews on our podcast. We get stars all the time, but I would love it if you all did just check in. Let us know what we're doing right. We have made lots of different improvements over the years. So let us know how you like the audio, how you like the interviews, and if there's something we can do better. Maybe you just shoot me an email. You don't have to necessarily write that on Apple Podcast reviews. If you can, if you want to, you can. But shoot me an email at cschaffer, S-H-A-F-F-E-R, at equinenetwork.com. If you have things to tell us, anything you want for the next season, we will be looking forward to all kinds of new things. But anyway, in the meantime, enjoy this episode. Hey, Jade, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am good. Are you on some downtime right now between... Are you going to Odessa?
I am actually... I'm going to Odessa, but I'm not entered in Odessa. I'm taking Zoe over there Thursday night. She's up, but then coming back. And we got junior high rodeo this weekend, so...
Oh, wow. Who is Colby roping with at the junior high rodeos?
He ropes with a kid named Landon Da Silva.
And who's he riding? Does he heal?
Yeah, he heals for Landon. He rides Rosie mostly, and then he ribbon ropes and breakaways on the little gray mare that I healed on some the last couple years.
That's funny that you bring up Rosie, because I told you before we started this podcast that we were going to talk about your horses, and I feel like Rosie might be the least known, but she's been around for a long time.
I know. She kind of shows my age. She's 13 this year.
Nuh-uh. So. That's wild.
That's how long ago I won San Antonio the first time.
So Rosie was the colt that – they don't still do that, do they?
No, I can't remember what year they stopped, but they don't do it anymore. I wish they did, but I thought that's a pretty cool prize to win.
Yeah, and she's turned out to be, like, I remember the kids riding her when you first started her at a photo shoot forever ago, and you've been and now the kids ride her pretty much. Or do you still jackpot on her at all? Or
I haven't. She once I kind of started letting Colby ride her, I've just kind of let him. I've rode her a little bit. Like, I helped on her at that futurity that Cole Davison and Wesley Thorpe put on over here in Stephenville. I rode her over there, and I've rode her off and on, but I've pretty much just let Colby ride her. But yeah, she's been extremely good to have around. She was the easiest horse in the world to train. She's actually a half sister to Brandon Beer's old head horse Tivo, and I didn't know that for a long time. I just kind of found that out by accident one day. That they're out of the same stud. But she's been like a kid's horse ever since the day I first got on her. She's been really, really good to have around. So
yeah, she's and she looks cool too. She's gonna be cool, make cool babies too when you finally decide to breed her.
Yeah, actually that's funny you say that, because I think I'm gonna do that this next year here. So
do you have a stud picked out?
Well, actually, I talked to Patrick about, I'd like to breed her to Rooster. I didn't know if they were both too little, but he said that he throws decent-sized babies usually, or not just extremely small, which she's not just tiny either, but I just didn't want to have a super small colt. But I think that if the size would be right, that would be, it'd be hard to not have a good one out of those two.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rooster's babies, yeah, they haven't been super small, and there's some size on the other side of that, so that's
right.
Cool.
So that might be, that's kind of, I mean, that's my hopeful, so that might be the one. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I like I said, I warned you that I wanted to talk about horses, because one of my favorite stories is the Ice Cube story. And so Pedigree has never, I think you're like, every once in a while there's this quote that goes around Facebook from you talking about outlaw horses, and that, you know, you can't ride papers. And Ice Cube was probably the horse that set you with that thought process originally.
He set my thought process on a lot of stuff, actually.
Yeah.
I love when that post comes around, though. I get lots of messages every time. I know when it does, so.
Yeah, it's like you get mixed messages about it, because sometimes there's
I think a lot of people took it out of context. That was what I meant by it. I wasn't meaning that papers mean nothing. I just meant they aren't a have to have.
Aren't everything.
Right.
Okay.
I'm well aware that papers mean something. If breeding is a good start, but it's not essential all the time. That's all I meant by that.
More, they mean more and more every day, as there's more and more money attached to it. But you probably won. How much would you say you won on Ice Cube? So if anybody doesn't know, Ice Cube's the horse that you got when you were 15 that you made your first finals on?
Yeah, 15.
Yeah. Okay. Give me the rundown on how he came to be at your house.
I was at a U.S. Roping in Reno, Nevada, when they still had that roping, like in maybe March or April. I can't remember when it was, but sometime in the spring, and my horse actually got hurt at that roping, and he was kind of the only thing I had to ride at the time. And a friend of mine from California, Wade Bunn, was there, and he just came up and told me, he said, man, I have a colt that's, he might be good one day, I don't know. He said he doesn't know a lot, but he's kind of basically a shithead is what he said, but he was pretty cheap, and he just said if I was interested in trying him, that he would get him sent over there or come get him or whatever. And so a friend of mine from home, a guy that shoots horses named Trey Moncrief, was going to be over there like the next week, and told me that if I wanted to, he'd bring him back for me. And so that's how I ended up getting him over there. And just kind of, I mean, he was exactly what he said he was. He tried to buck every time that I saddled him, and then he would sit in the box for a while. Like, I don't know how much he'd been roped on, like, for real out of the box. He'd been roped on some, but he had 0% cow. If a cow came at him, you were going left, right, or backwards. Like, he was not interested in it. And then he kind of had a time limit in the box. If he would sit there and he would kind of lock up and put his head to the right, and I eventually learned to get off it because he would either rear up and walk out or he would go over the side of the box. So, and I did that at a few jackpots and high school rodeos and junior rodeos. Everybody got to see the beginning part. So the only reason I didn't give up on him is because he's the only thing I had to ride. So
yeah. Did you know?
kind of one of them. It was weird because he finally just, like, I remember going out there at my parents' house and there'd be no steers, nobody around, just waiting for them to get home from farming so we could practice. And I would just sit in the box and open the chute, and he scored bad by myself. Like, he was, I literally would, there would be days where I did that for, I don't know, I mean, just hours, like no telling how many times I opened the chute. And I don't know that it ever really helped. he got over the rear and out and stuff, but he was always a little bit tight in the box. Not like he never, it was kind of, he would turn into one of those ones that kind of a gamer, like terrible to practice on for his whole life. But he got to where when you went somewhere, like he was good. But if you tried to mess with him at home, he was terrible for until he was 26 years old. So
now, when did he get good? Like, that he was actually the horse?
Well, it was kind of, I think he was probably, I had people ask about him all the time. So he was probably better than I thought he was before I thought he was, because I hated him so much just because of, nobody saw the home life we had. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the first place I rode him, well, actually, I only had him for a couple weeks, probably, and we had a high school rodeo, and so I literally would morning, afternoon, nighttime him, and go to other people's house and practice, like just trying to crash course it to where I could get by, and I would ace him. I aced him at the first one, and he worked really. He was good on ace at the beginning. Mm-hmm. The first, it was kind of weird. The first time I gave him ace, it like had the reverse effect.
Yeah.
And so don't even know why I gave it to him again. But after that first time, well, I do know why I gave it to him again, is I didn't have another option. Like, it, going cold turkey wasn't going to work. I knew that. So I think he was already hot the first time I gave it to him, is probably why. But I aced him at the first high school rodeo and did good. He worked really good. And so I did that for a little while. And then I just kind of, he got just so pal, like I roped the dummy lead steer, because like when I was that age, like my parents were farming and stuff, I was just kind of home, you know, I was the only one there, so I just would chase something around, lead steer, and he just got so patterned to going towards the object that you know, just that many repetitions, I think is why he ended up, still never had any, like he wasn't cowy, he just knew this is what we're following or whatever. And I just did that so much on him that he kind of, there was a point where I almost did give up, and I turned him out for a little while, and I was just like, man, I'm done. Like, I'm either going to kill him or he's going to kill me. So I give up. And then like a month later, I got him back in, and it was like, that's when he was good that first time, and he was good the rest of his life after that.
Yeah. And so you were like 15, 16, and then you got your card when you were 18, right? So he was the horse that you went to all the rodeos on that first year.
Well, I ended up, when I turned him out was when my black horse got well. That was when I decided I was giving up. The black horse was fine, so I got him back. And then he was already kind of older. And so I bought a buckskin horse from that Rocky Carpenter was healing on. And that was kind of, she was kind of my main horse at the time. And Ice Cube, like kind of back and forth. But I rode her, like my rookie year when I started roping with Matt, I was like, I rode her at first. And he was the one that we were practicing one day. And he's like, man, how come you don't ride that saddle horse more? And I just kind of told him, I said, well, man, I don't really trust him like yet. Like he's kind of, I mean, he kind of knew at that point all his little quirks he had and stuff. And he's like, man, I think that horse is better than you think he is. And so I said, well, if you want me to ride him, I said, I will. And the first place that was after that was Houston. And we won. That was when Houston was just three head and a short. And I don't remember what round, but I remember one of the ones we were getting close to the chalk line. And I remember I felt like he was slowing down, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to jump the chalk line. And Matt turned the steer right. Sure enough, like right as he's turning the steer, I'm jumping the chalk line, and he hit the ground and sucked right back through himself. And I threw, just didn't even know what I was doing, but threw. And it ended up feeling like I just got around the steer. And that was the day I remember I was like, well, I guess I'll never not trust him again. If he made the corner that time, he's always going to make the corner. So, but if it hadn't been for Matt telling me to, I don't know that I would have yet. You know what I mean? Like at that point.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, man, if I ride this horse, I'm going to get cut. And he's the one telling me to ride him. So that was kind of what. And then from that point on, that was pretty much my main horse. So.
What else did he define for you? You said he showed you a lot of things, but like what other standards did he set for a good horse?
He just really showed me where you're supposed to be. You know what I mean? Like that was the funny, because like it was hard to ride bad position on him because he was scared of the cow. So he didn't want to go towards them. So he kept his space. When you're running down the arena, he stayed away from them. And then once they turned and went away from him, he would go right in there behind them. So it was kind of like it was just complete luck that he was like that, but it just imprinted in me, like how long you could wait for the steer to turn before you had to turn and still be in a good spot, and kept the steer in front of me. I could always see the feet. Like it just kind of like he got trained. Like I just got so many repetitions of that look that's just how I based everything else I was doing on every other horse too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And people, when they talk about you being the goat, you know, it's always between you and Champ when they say who's the goat of healing. Do you feel like they talk about your position, and that came from Ice Cube and how you rode the corner with him?
I mean, I really think so a lot. I mean, once it got to when I was little, I used to always, the two things that my parents and everybody used to tell me was I have to swing harder and I have to get closer, because I had a big loop. And so if I got closer, I couldn't swing it because I was too close. So I just kind of got used to being comfortable with the steer in front of me a little bit. But then when I started getting better and like started roping in the opens or the 15s or the 11s at the time, 15s now, I was thinking, or to throw faster, I'm thinking that I need to get in there. So then I kind of went through that little phase of, you know, trying to go off of what my natural thought was. And so he's what made me believe it at that level for sure. You know, like to where I didn't have to panic and I didn't have to be trying to turn the steer for my header. I could wait for him to do it, you know, and still be fast enough.
All right, today's episode is brought to you by Forage First Patriot Feeds. You work every day to make sure your equine partner has the best. However, finding the best feed with all the right nutrition at all the right levels can seem like a never-ending search. Search no more. Patriot Feeds are designed to deliver the nutrients your partner needs to help them perform at their best in the arena. With Forage First Patriot Feeds, you will always know your horse is getting the nutrients he needs and the ingredients that he can use. Feed Forage First. Feed the way nature intended. Feed Forage First Patriot Feeds. Thinking about that, when you were a kid, and you've been around a lot more kids lately, especially with your kids getting old enough and getting in junior rodeo, did you want it an exceptional amount? Like, did you want it that much more than every other 15-year-old? Or were you natural?
I mean, now that I've been around long enough, if I had to make the hindsight assumption, I must have wanted. I'm not going to go out and say I wanted it more than anybody, but what I noticed now practicing, like my kid now thinks that we practice. We don't practice. If I had to say we practice. You know what I mean? Like, I just remember, and it was just, I don't know if it's just because what, like how I was brought, like the summertime when I'm too young to drive the trucks when my parents are farming, I'm just home waiting for them. So I'm roping the goat all day long. I have nothing else to do. I'm literally roping, watching roping tapes. When my mom makes dinner, she has to make me come in from roping my goat. And then I watch roping tapes to fall asleep. You know what I mean? Like, I just never quit. Like, so the amount of, and I'm sure there's kids out there that practice. Like, I know Nicky Northcott ropes like that. And it shows. He's went, I mean, 3 years ago, he was learning how to swing his rope and catch the steer. And now he's a 10. You know what I mean? Like, he's nothing. He's for real. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, there's no luck involved in what Nicky's doing. You know what I mean? Like, he's roped that much. Like, he's earned everything that he's winning because of what he's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember practicing like that, like roping goats, roping as many steer. I used to be done whenever there was no more headers. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't ever say like, oh yeah, I've had enough. Like, I'm going to quit. Like, I just, whenever nobody else would head, then that was done. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Well, how bad do you feel like you want it now compared to 15-year-old Jade?
I feel the same. I want it even more probably, but I don't. I can't. It's just I'm kind of at the point of just the priority shifts. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, with my kids and stuff, it's just different. But if I'm have no kids and I'm just a single guy by myself, I would still be doing it like I used to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it just hit that point, like, I feel like I've got to have, I mean, I obviously, I still, it's still how I make my living for them, so it's kind of a, it's, my mom put it good to me one day, she was like, you know, it is, rodeoing for you is fun, but it's also your job, so, because I always say, like, I feel selfish, like, I don't feel right anymore about doing stuff, missing their stuff for myself, because it's like, well, I've already got to have my fun, but then at the same time, it's what I do to pay for their stuff, so.
Yeah. How much, I feel like over the years as I've interviewed guys who have had more priorities or had more life things that took their time away, the gold buckle focus, you know, when it would be anything for a gold buckle, it kind of shifted away and it went more to making a living. How much, like, how do you balance? I mean, obviously, if you're winning and you're making a great living, then you have a better chance at a gold buckle. But can you talk about that priority, like winning the world versus, you know, making the finals every year, being consistent, making good runs, just doing your job? Where is your focus?
It's kind of hit. I mean, I hate admitting that, but I guess I know what you have to do to, like, Caleb and Junior, they should have won those gold buckles last year, regardless of any, whatever happened, anyone's opinion. The people out here doing it know. They went to Montgomery, Alabama. They went to Rapid City, South Dakota. They went, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're doing the stuff that, like, now I'm like, man, there's no chance of me going to Montgomery. I'm not going to Rapid City. I'm not going. I didn't even enter Odessa. Like, I'm not. So, if it's like a weird feel. It's like, okay, so the rodeo count 75. Last year I went to 48. So I didn't put in the effort to win. Mm-hmm. I can't be mad about not winning it. I didn't put in the effort to win. I win third, which doesn't matter. I mean, other than making the American, doesn't matter. But it's like, so, like, it just means, or I only am bringing that up for your point of, like, saying you can still make a good living. So, yeah, I win third in the world and went to 48 rodeos. So that's good for me. Like, if I can apply myself like I used to or need to, then I would be pissed if I won third. You know what I mean? But this year, I told you that when we won the round and did the interview, I was like, I don't think those guys shouldn't win it. Like, so I don't play. It seems weird sitting there saying, you know, I'm not here to win it because I don't deserve to, but that's kind of the reality of it, was I didn't deserve to win it. So it would have been a weird feeling if that had worked out that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. So, Okay, I'm gonna pivot back to your horses, and I feel like we could do two episodes at least, an hour long on each one of your horses, because there have been so many. How much did Ice Cube remind you of Jackal? Did they have similarities? I mean, I know their early stories kind of have similarities, but by the time you got Jackal, did he remind you at all of Ice Cube?
The older Ice, yeah. I mean, just the fact of they were so good at doing what they needed to do right when they needed to do it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like Jackal, you know, everybody thought Jackal was tight, or like people that didn't ever ride him and stuff. He would go as fast as and free as he could go to a certain spot, and you could keep moving your feet and he would go all day. He just wasn't going to go farther than that. Mm-hmm. Which that's what we're all trying to train them all to do, is not get too close. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's where, like Jackal at the NFR, you could literally let your hair down because you can't override him. You can do whatever you got to do, whatever you think you need to do, and to be aggressive enough, and he's not going to go too close to the steer.
Yeah.
So it's like a heel horse for dummies. You know what I mean? Like you couldn't. And Ice Cube would have definitely, you couldn't do that to him in his early days, but I'm sure Jackal was the same way. But when he got older and got to where he was, like that was why I had so much confidence in him, because I just felt like I just kind of backed in there knowing that, because you know, you don't know what the steer is going to do. So I just plan on him taking care of that part. I'm just worried about the feet when they turn. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I didn't, it's kind of funny now looking back, like in the middle of it all, like, yeah, he felt amazing and felt great and it felt easy to catch on him, but I didn't even really realize how good I had it for a while. You know what I mean? Until you don't have it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. But you almost, I don't know. I feel like you've pretty much, until lately when, you know, when Champ got hurt, you haven't hardly ever been afoot. You've always been on one of the best horses, because pretty soon you had Caveman right after Ice Cube, and then you had Switchblade, but it's not like you got to ride Switchblade just everywhere, but you had some amazing ones.
I was really, really lucky in that department.
Yeah. How did Caveman and Switchblade then complement what Jackal and Ice Cube, because I feel like they were just kind of similar in there. I mean, they were and they weren't, in that they were kind of outlaw attitude sort of horses, but Caveman and Switchblade seemed like, in my mind at least, they were more similar. Is that the case, or
they were so much bigger than the other two. Like mm-hmm. Caveman and Switchblade were head horse size. Like they were, if they were people, they were like Will Loomis, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they were just like specimens of an animal that their athletic ability was unbelievable. You know what I mean? Like they could do things that they would never have to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were just freaks kind of in that nature of what they, like how fast they could run and just the stuff that they were athletically capable of, where Jackal was bigger. Ice Cube wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. He had big feet and big legs, and a big head, but not a big body. You know yeah. what I mean? Like uh-huh. his feet and leg. That's why he never was hurt. Like mm-hmm. When I sold him to Jim Cooper, he had not been injected one time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that was 2011. So I'd had him however long, in 8 years, and never even took him to the vet.
Yeah.
But he didn't have to pack much weight around, you know what I mean? And he had the legs to pack around a Caveman or Switchblade. So mm-hmm. I'm convinced that's why he stayed, you know, as good as he did forever. But so they were closer. They just were similar. Jackal and Ice Cube were just more similar in that area. Like their size and stride was just a little different than the other two. But they were all obviously really, really good. So
yeah, decent. They worked out okay. Are you building any horses right now at your house? Like any replacements to Champ? Because Champ's 18 this year, is that?
18 now, yep.
Yeah, 18 as of yesterday or 2 days.
I have a yellow horse that's 7 that I really, really like a lot and reminds me a lot of kind of a mix, which I've been jackpotting on him here this last fall and stuff. But he's just like everything I've had that's good. He's a little bit when he's fresh, he's just a little bit green. But when he's been, like when I have him tired and rode, he feels as good as any of them ever. So I'm pretty excited. I mean, I feel like, I know if I didn't have him, I'd be looking for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
I'm not going to let myself. Sometimes I get caught up in the same thing I said, like last year, like we have, I see the bad days too. So sometimes I'm mad at him. Sometimes I'm not. And so I know the ins and outs of the times he's done bad, the times he hasn't done bad. But as a whole, like this last fall, everywhere I rode him, he did really good everywhere I took him. So, yeah. But they all go through it. I mean, I wouldn't want to ride one. Like I didn't even take him to the NFR with me because I knew if something happened to Champ, I would want to get on him. And I knew I didn't want to, just because of his age, I wasn't going to do that. You know, I haven't rode him anywhere, so I'm not going to ride him at the NFR. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would have borrowed a horse before I would have wanted to ride him, but I would have borrowed one before I rode him just because of that. You know what I mean? So.
That reminded me when you were talking about, I had forgotten about this. You were saying that Ice Cube never got hurt, but he did go blind in his left eye. What was the process of him kind of relearning to see the steer and to make the corner?
It was kind of a hard process because nobody knew it. Everybody thought it was after, it was when Chad Williams had got him. Okay, so long story short, after I got him back from gym, really he's responsible for everything. I mean, I used him to get Switchblade. Mm-hmm. And then Chad Williams bought him from Big Al. And it was when Chad Williams had him that kind of stuff started going bad. Like he would do really good sometimes, and sometimes he would not even turn in. Like it was looking like he was just played out almost. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, now realizing what it was, I feel bad for the stuff that happened because it just looked bad. It made it look like he just gave up and just quit working, when really he had the way it was explained to me was it was like when a human has glaucoma or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they said, like, in the middle of it, sometimes he would see shadows, sometimes he wouldn't, sometimes he could see a little bit, sometimes more, sometimes not. And so that's when I ended up buying him. I just wanted him back regardless. And so when Chad decided to sell him, that's when I bought him and sent him to my dad. And I rode him a few times kind of during when my dad had him, like when I flew out to the Brock Cresta the 1 year of the ERA and I rode him out there. And he would feel really good if you kept him. What it felt like is if you were like trying to run him into a wall. Mm-hmm. Like the second you quit kicking, he would just start slowing down and act like he just felt like he didn't want to go. You know, it was kind of weird. And of course, everybody was looking at, you know, is he crippled? Is he sore here, sore there? Looking at all the wrong stuff until how I noticed it was he would, if you were standing on his left side, he would just turn and just run into you. Like if he turned, he would hit his head on the fence, or like you have him at the trailer and turn him into you, he would just run into you, not even, like he didn't even know you were there. And that's kind of how I noticed it. And had him looked at, and then sure enough, that's how we found out. So it was kind of dangerous looking back on it until he got completely blind. But yeah. And then once that happened, then he was good to go. They said that, and I didn't even know this until that, but I guess once they go completely blind, I guess a horse can, they end up over a little bit of time, their other eye can see almost like 90 degrees to the other side. So he couldn't see behind his eye, but he could see all the way around the other side. Mm-hmm. According to people that know more than I do, I guess, but
yeah, it's like when they can see the shadows, it's worse than when they can't see anything. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, I gotcha. Are you going to, and now this is such the hot topic, maybe it's just because I make it that way, but I really think it's also the hot topic is the futurity stuff. Are you getting any futurity horses ready for the coming year? Is that a priority for you at all?
I don't have any personally. It is something that I would like to, I mean, I'm behind the eight ball kind of on that, but I am interested in it. I would either, if for me to get in it right now, I'd have to be riding for someone, but yeah. Me and Zoe are breeding some that, you know, it's we're on the 4-year plan, I guess, but, I'm slowly but surely, yes, I'm trying to get some bred to do that. So some of my own, cause you can't buy them right now. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't.
Right.
Yep.
They're going to be on riding for someone or on my, I'll see you in 4 years, I guess.
Got it. And as far as that goes, where, you know, I know, like Joseph says, he's going to slow down rodeoing because he's going to maturity. Is there a, you're 35, you have like, I don't know, 15, 20 more years if you're on the Clay Cooper or Walt Woodard plan. Is there a plan for the next decade or so?
I mean, I never say never, but I'm going to say that I don't make it that. I'm not going to be on that plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do love it, but I don't know if it's the same for everybody, but if you can make as much money as it looks like you can make at these futurities and that kind of stuff and be home, if I'm out here just to make the money anyway, then I'd rather just be home and do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because it's just the driving stuff has gotten to me. Like, I don't want to drive across the street anymore. So that kind of stuff, just the being gone. And I mean, if you can do that, then I would definitely probably choose that route over the highway stuff. So.
Yeah, I don't think those guys had the same options. The futurity stuff.
Well, that's what I mean. That's why it's hard to say that. I mean, just like every 10 years, just the different eras of stuff. You know, if I was in that era, I probably would have done exactly what they did. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am pretty sure that I told you 20 minutes, and it looks like it has been 34 minutes and 56 seconds that I've been talking to you. So, I will let you go. Thanks, Jade.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Hey, okay. Today's episode was brought to you by Forage First Patriot Feeds by ADM. You can learn more at ADMAnimalNutrition.com. Of course, we interviewed Jade because Jade, in fact, does feed ADM Forage First Feeds. You can find out more, like I said, at ADMAnimalNutrition.com. Thank you all for sticking around for this whole episode. Thank you to our podcast producers at the Money Barrel Podcast. By the way, if there's a barrel racer in your family, even if there's not, head over to the Money Barrel Podcast. You can find them on everywhere that we stream podcasts, as well as it's one of our sister podcasts, the Barrel Racing Magazine, our online barrel racing content hub, also hosts the Money Barrel. So check them out. Thank you to Craig and Kayla at the Money Barrel for producing The Score.